I'm Kurt Anderson in today for Brian Lehrer, and in keeping with this week of Easter and Passover, we are continuing the show's exploration of religion. Last week, Brian talked with Alain de Botton about religion for non-believers, or I should say, quote, religion, unquote, for non-believers, and with the famous active, aggressive atheist Sam Harris. This morning, the conversation shifts to true believers. My next guest, T.M. Luhrmann, is a professor of anthropology at Stanford University, and in her new book, she tries to understand how, as thinkers like de Botton and Harris are making the case for atheism, American Christians profess these close, very close personal relationships with Jesus and God. Her book is called When God Talks Back, Understanding the American Evangelical Relationship with God, and she joins me now. Tanya Luhrmann, welcome to WNYC.
It's great to be here.
So you are a Stanford professor, a psychological anthropologist. And like, I guess, there is a history in anthropology. Margaret Mead comes to mind. You didn't stand back from afar. You really plunged in among the natives.
Yeah, that's what anthropologists do. We try to the extent that we can to go native and then to come back and understand what it takes to be a member of that group. And so I started this. I really wanted to know what people meant when they said that God spoke to them, God told them something. And so what I learned is that that's a skill. People can learn to have that experience. It changes their mind. And I thought people were a heck of a lot more sophisticated about it than I thought they would be.
Well, I want you to talk about what you did. This wasn't a thing you went in for a few months. This was many years in the making. Describe your research.
So I spent 2 years in a church in Chicago, a Vineyard Christian Fellowship, one of these new paradigm kind of bands and a gym kind of churches, evangelical churches.
But with hundreds of churches and large numbers of adherents all over the country.
There are 600 of these churches, and there are thousands more like them in the country. And I spent 2 years in that church. I went to Sunday services. I was a member of a weekly house group. I hung out with people. I went to regional conferences. I went to little gatherings. Then I moved across the country to California, did the same thing for another 2 years. I was a member of a prayer group and actually a second prayer group. And I really spent a lot of time with people.
Did it feel as though, well, here I am, an anthropologist, as if I were among an indigenous tribe in the Amazon? Or was it something, here I am with some other Americans who are not exactly like me, but I feel it.
You know, what was eerie for me was realizing that my own, you know, I'm certainly not a traditional Christian. And my own...
Are you a Christian, though?
I wouldn't use that term. But I have a place for things spiritual in my life. I've learned much more about that over the last few years. And what I was so struck by was that my own ambivalences, anxieties, doubts, wonderings, I mean, were much more like the people I spent time with than I imagined. I thought I would stick out like a sore thumb. And these are people who straightforwardly would tell you on any survey that they absolutely believe in God, usually without any doubts. But when you talk to them, they have a much more complicated experience. They also have a visceral experience of God.
And not only believe in God, but also, by and large, take the Bible literally or close to literally.
Yep.
And that I've thought about a lot and wondered about that, which is one set of things that I, as a non-believer, find it difficult to understand. But the people you talk to and spent so much time with actually believe that what I would regard as the thoughts in their head are God speaking directly to them.
Yep. That's what you have to learn to do when you spend time in a church like this. I mean, I first set out on this path when a young woman told me that I should have coffee with God, because she had coffee with God all the time. She went for walks with God. She chatted with God. She cuddled with God. I met people who went on dates with God. And part of what they're doing in this experience is looking for thoughts in their mind that they think that God has placed there. And so part of the business of the church is teaching them to discern, which of those thoughts are not their thoughts but God's thoughts?
I have so much more I want to talk to you about. I found this book deeply fascinating, and I could have you here for the full rest of the show, but we won't. I want to hear from listeners. This is Kurt Anderson in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC Radio. I'm speaking with the Stanford anthropologist T.M. Lehrman about her new book and her quest to try to bridge the gap between believers and agnostics, let's say, or people who don't believe in the way that the most fervent evangelical Christians do. So let's try a little of that here. Does God speak to you, listeners, any of you? Tell those of us who haven't had that experience what it's like. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or post your comment to the website at WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. So back to this. This is the thing. As I was reading your book, I had heard you read your explanation of how they train themselves, how these mm-hmm. churches train their people to hear God. How did you ever get to the point where you thought, well, maybe they are, as opposed to, no, they're just defining feelings, thoughts, emotions in their head in this divine sense?
So I don't think that a social scientist has the authority to pronounce on whether God exists or not. I think that's above my pay scale. But I think that what I can report is that when people practice praying in this way, when they practice training their imagination, they begin to experience God as talking, what they call God as talking back. They talk about recognizing God's voice the way they recognize their mom's voice on the phone. They report more unusual experience. And I ran this experiment at one point and demonstrated that when you randomize people into prayer practices and lectures on the Gospels, something does change about their minds. Their mental imagery becomes more vivid. Their inner world becomes more alive. They have these more intense and unusual experiences.
And did you, again, as an anthropologist, think, to the degree these things are measurable through fMRI and other means, are the subjective experiences as neurobiological facts similar to, say, meditation and other forms of religious feeling?
Yeah.
Or spiritual feeling?
So meditation, there are two big styles of prayer in the Christian tradition, and I would argue throughout religious practice, two big styles of mental prayer practice. One is like meditation. You empty your mind. You disattend to the external world. You disattend to your thoughts. You try to sort of hold yourself motionless before the divine. This way of praying, you use your imagination. That doesn't mean that God is necessarily imaginary. You know, God is immaterial if God exists, and so if you're going to represent him, you're going to use your imagination, which the church fathers knew in abundance. I mean, Augustine thought that the route to God went through the mind. And so people use their imaginations and attend to that experience, and that changes them. And it changes them as profoundly, I think, as meditation does.
And as a psychologist, I mean, I can imagine people who believed God was talking to them directly in certain moments, in certain places, in certain periods of history in our lifetime mm-hmm. would be diagnosed as mentally ill.
Yeah.
How does one draw that line?
It's a hard line to draw. It's a hard line for me to draw, hard line for the church to draw. But I can tell you one thing that's really clear. When people in the church say that they hear God speak audibly, which a fair number of them do, they have that experience in a way that's really different than people with schizophrenia reporting hearing voices. So folks with schizophrenia, they hear lots of voices. When they hear a voice, it's long. They hear sentences, conversations, paragraphs. They hear them frequently, and what they hear is bad. In the church, when people reported God speaking audibly, they could remember one, two experiences. What they heard was short, four words, and what they heard was good. It was pretty startling. You'd be driving down the road, you hear God speak up from the back seat saying, "I will always be with you." It's a little freaky.
And did it ever happen in the dozens, hundreds of people you spoke to's experience without the practice and the focus and and the intention of, I want to hear God talk to me?
Yeah. These unusual experiences, these unusual sensory experiences are a whole lot more common in the general population than we imagine. But in the religious population, people who are praying consistently, I think they happen more often and they have more content.
We have a caller, Peter from Flushing in Queens, who is an evangelical Christian and talks to God. Peter, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So talk to us about your experience and how this began happening, how frequently it happens. How do you describe it to those of us who haven't had it happen to us?
Okay. This is a great question, and it's a good it's a great dialogue that you're having today. So I'm happy that you can hear me.
Great.
You know, from my perspective, when I hear God speak to me, it's usually something coming from. I'm going to describe it as sort of a path into my thoughts that is sort of identified by myself as a path that's not usually the origin of my own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then oftentimes. I'm going to use the word discern, but I try to discern that that's God's voice, but also sort of looking at the content of that. Is it consistent with what other people in my life are telling me? Is it consistent with what I believe God's values are? And then, you know, I call that the Holy Spirit. Other people call it different things, but that's kind of how I hear God's voice.
And what kinds of things does he say when you hear him?
Sometimes there's some specificity to it, like... you should pray for this person.
And how long has this been going on, your conversations with God? I guess we have lost our caller. Is this typical?
Yes, this is the way that people talk about hearing from God. And people sometimes talk about very strong thoughts. They sometimes have these unusual auditory experiences. That's pretty rare. And a thing I was impressed by is that to outsiders, this looks kind of nutty. But
yes.
I thought that people were pretty sophisticated and careful in the way they identified God's voice. And if you took from a secular perspective, what people are doing is picking out the parts of their experience that are good and like a good conscience, helping to make that external and then modeling themselves upon that representation.
There isn't much in your book about politics. When evangelicals come up in the conversation, in my conversations anyway, they're usually about, well, how important are they to electing Republican
right.
X, Y, or Z? Was that a reflection of your interest, that you were more interested in the spiritual, subjective experience of transcendence than you were politics? Or are these people in the particular denomination you spoke to less political?
They were not less political, but I wanted to get past the politics. And I wasn't interested in what people were arguing. I wanted to know how they had this experience, what it was like to talk with God, and what it was like to experience God as talking back. What was that like?
Spending so much time with them and realizing how many millions of our fellow Americans have this experience, did it freak you out at first?
You know, sometimes, yes. I mean, it was a little odd to hear people talk so intimately and familiarly about God. But it's really important to understand because it's as you say, millions and millions of Americans experience God in this way. And I think once you understand it, it's a lot less scary.
I can imagine, unusually for a book, your book being read with interest by people like me who read it with interest, and by evangelical believers and feeling not dismissed. And was that your intention?
Absolutely. I wanted to know, I mean, I was so used to seeing a ravine between believers and non-believers. I grew up as a religious mutt myself. I mean, I knew all these really...
A religious mutt, did you say?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, I mean, my father's father was a Christian Scientist. My dad became a doctor. My mother's father was a Baptist minister. She became an apostate. All three of my cousins are fundamentalist Christians. They're all good people. I wanted to figure out what they, and they all seem to have different evidence for what's real in the world. And I think I now understand that they do have different evidence. They experience the world differently.
And extrapolating the different evidence, which is to say disagreeing about facts, extended to other realms of our social lives and political discourse, should I worry about that?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the political disagreements between groups is pretty significant. Nevertheless, I think if you understand how people experience God, at least you don't, you know, when sometimes when a liberal hears Rick Santorum say, "God told me," it just seems bizarre. And I think that's not a helpful way to approach that statement.
Gotcha. Do the people you spent so much time with feel threatened, however, by secularism, or are they perfectly happy having their experience of God, and we can go about our business if we don't have that?
I think it's hard to be a Christian these days. For all the Christians, for all the commitment, for all these groups and active churches, I think that no Christian is unaware that there are smart, decent people who are not Christian. And so that means that person is always, to some extent, aware of the possibility of another interpretation. I actually think this incredibly vivid experience of God is a way of hanging on to faith and allowing yourself to experience the world as good despite the evidence to the contrary.
Well, and one of the most interesting and, from my biased point of view, hopeful parts of your book was so many of these people with whom you spoke do experience doubt. It's not as though they flipped a switch and never have a doubt again.
Absolutely. That was what impressed me. They're thoughtful. They are, you know, they experience God, and then they sort of think to myself, was that really my thought? Was that really God? How would I understand that as an external direction? Yes.
Well, we will leave it there for today. This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and I'm Kurt Anderson sitting in today for Brian. I have been speaking with T.M. Lehrman about her really fascinating new book, When God Talks Back, Understanding the American Evangelical Relationship with God. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Up
Thanks
next,
for having me.
What's your hidden talent? Your hidden, perhaps silly, ridiculous, useless talent? Andy Selsberg has a list. We'll be right back.